Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. Satchmo and DB rolling at you on a fine spring day. At least I think it's fine. It's fine where I'm at. Define where you at, DB. DB?
There, DB.
Are you there, DB? Well, we can't hear DB. DB, can you call back in? As usual, Blog Talk Radio, delivering the goods. Anyway, we got a fun show planned for you this week. Talking NFL draft, Michigan State spring football, NCAA, changing course, Spartan baseball, the crime blotter is back. And that's just not a good thing. The mess that is the Detroit Red Wings, the mess that is the Detroit Tigers, NHL and NBA predictions, and a little Prince talk. Joining me, hopefully we can hear him this time around, to talk about that and more is the one, the only thin man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings, Spartan Nation. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. You know, the start
all right.
of all over. The start of all of our shows are like a Verizon commercial. Now, DB, am I understanding things correctly? You are doing your annual Mother's Day trip back to the D.
That is absolutely correct, yes. And other than watching the Tigers bullpen implode today, it was an enjoyable time with good weather.
So Justin Verlander pitched well despite his engagement to Kate Upton.
Well, on the day that the engagement happened, he did not pitch well. I believe he got ambushed by the Cleveland Indians. But in today's game against the Texas Rangers, he looked like the Justin Verlander of old. He didn't give up any runs in seven innings of work.
Yeah, how about that? We'll start here. We'll get to the Michigan State stuff. But because I brought it up, stuck my foot in my mouth. Detroit has an interesting history, DB, of sports athletes whose careers slumped, I think is the best word for it, upon their involvement with a high-profile woman. The most obvious example of this, of course, is Sergei Fedorov and Anna Kournikova. Fedorov was fantastic pre-Kournikova. Pretty good during Kournikova, slumped post-Kournikova, really slumped when the whole Pavel Bure Kournikova stuff came out, and then rebounded after that. But there were definitely some documented struggles. There have been other instances of this, DB. Why is it that Detroit sports stars tend to go downhill when they're involved with prominent women?
Maybe it's because, Satchmo, that they're scared that they might not find enough good women right here in the Metro Detroit area, and that's all they have. I don't know.
I don't know. I've got a couple of working theories. So the first is, and this is sort of the general thing, and I think this is true of all athletes, right? It isn't true. In fact, Jack Nicklaus once said this of Tiger Woods. The test of Tiger Woods' greatness wasn't going to be, how well he performed as a youngster. It was going to be how well he performed after he got married or after he built relationships and had a family and that sort of thing. Because at that point, you no longer have the single-mindedness that really athletes need to succeed and thrive. And what made Jack Nicklaus great was even after getting married and having a family, he was able to perform and thrive at the highest levels. And so that is very much the case. Now, look, the bottom line is there are plenty of athletes that do well after they have kids and after they have a family and that sort of thing. However, the greatest and most single-minded of the bunch tend to do their best work when they're not married. Or when they're not focusing on their family. And so I think that's sort of an interesting phenomenon. And I'm not trying to get into trouble. I can just see like the Twitter maelstrom just brewing over my head. And so that isn't the goal there, but there's sort of something to be said for that single-minded dedication to that. That is just much more difficult when you have kids and family, because then your focus is split, and that makes perfect sense. Instead of wanting to throw the extra 500 pitches on the side or 500 throws on the side or do the extra bullpen session or spend the extra time skating, you would much rather spend that time with your girlfriend. You would much rather spend that time with your kids. You'd much rather spend that time with your wife. And all of a sudden, you have things away from the ballpark that are much more interesting than your job. And so I think it makes perfect sense for that to happen. Justin Verlander is an interesting case, DB, though, in that his performance didn't just slip. It just sort of took a market dive after his involvement with Kate Upton. And I don't know if that's single-minded focus or just coincidence with injuries and just a whole lot of things happened, but it was just sort of an odd set of circumstances.
Yeah, the timing of Verlander's performance sort of slipping a little bit did coincide with a bunch of things, but it might be best that Kate Upton maybe just sort of stays away from the ballpark on the days that Justin is pitching. You can see him losing track, especially if he feels like he has to get into Bobby Valentine fake mustache and go sit in the stands behind her while the Tigers are batting. Maybe Brad Ausmus needs to let him do that.
And let's face it, DB, who amongst us wouldn't want to sit with Kate Upton in the stands? or anywhere else for that matter.
Hey-o.
All right. Let's switch gears. This is Sparty Talk after all. Let's talk a little Michigan State. NFL draft, TV. Did you watch? I watched
usually like the first round, and then that's about it. And this year I was sort of in and out of it. Was happy to see Jack Conklin taken high.
Yeah, I think he went number 8 draft pick, Tennessee.
He did? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I watched. I watched the first round. I watched the second and third rounds. I watched the fourth and fifth rounds before I tapped out.
Did you watch that? Did you watch that many rounds waiting to see where Connor Cook would go? Was that sort of your rationale for going that far?
It was initially waiting to see where Connor Cook would go. That was the initial rationale. And then it was waiting to see where Aaron Burbage would go. But I didn't quite make it to the Burbage draft pick. And I tapped out before that. Before we get into sort of the Michigan State angle and the Connor Cook angle and Jack Conklin going up high, can we say just how nice it is to have Lewis Riddick on the ESPN draft coverage and how much better he is than Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay? And so, it's nice to have that NFL front office presence. It's nice to have someone who actually has opinions that make sense and matter. And how much better he is than Chris Berman and John Gruden, who should just be kicked off the set and never allowed to return.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. So Chris Berman, I understand. Chris Berman's act is very tired. But John Gruden, what's your beef with John Gruden?
John Gruden's never met. Okay, first of all, John Gruden on Twitter, all right? He's like, I don't know what it is with this Twitter thing. The kids need to put Twitter away. Don't they know that Twitter's going to do nothing but get them in trouble? You want to be a professional NFL football player, get off the Twitter. should he like get on Twitter and learn what's going on before he goes on? It makes zero sense. And of course, we're talking. I mean, we're talking about it in relationship to what was it? The Ole Miss player that had Laramie had the bong hit, bong gas. I was a couple years old. I've never seen anything like this, DB. A hit job done on an NFL draft pick right before the draft has started. Had his account hacked. Had the bong picture shown and gas mask bomb. First of all, Steve, you and I have been around for a while. I mean, I thought we've pretty much seen and heard everything there is to see on this stuff. I've never seen a gas mask bomb. Have you?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So I mean, I was like, all right, that's pretty impressive. That shows A plus for creativity right there. But then they had his Instagram account got hacked, and his Instagram account got hacked, and so showing text messages between himself and the Ole Miss coach where he's asking the Ole Miss coach for to pay money for rent and maybe a couple other things, whatever it is, the Ole Miss coach agrees to it. And the best part about all of this is they put the poor guy up there after he's drafted, after he's slept, I think it was the 13th of Miami, and they put the poor guy up there, and in the press conference, he starts getting bombarded with questions, and good for the kid, right? He admits and goes, yeah, that was me. Did I send those text messages? Yeah, I sent those text messages. That happened. I mean, he didn't run away and hide from that stuff, and then The moment he started admitting to this stuff, his agent's assistant goes in and shuts it down so she can brief him behind closed doors. DB, what's up with the agent? First of all, with him slipping and falling like that, why isn't the agent in the room with him handling this and prepping him for this? His agent, Jimmy Sexton, I think his name is, really let him down.
Yeah, that's surprising, actually, because Jimmy Sexton is not brand new to the business. I mean, he's been around a little bit, and yeah, I was curious about that, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, you and I are communications professionals. And so we would know better than put him up there without that. But the reality was he was sitting up there handling it fairly well, all things considered. And to go shut it down was pretty bad. But, I mean, you could have stood up there and say, hey, he's answered enough of these questions. Let's move on to him being drafted in his future with Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
And that would have solved a lot of issues right there.
Yeah, I think there's a point where you sort of step in as his agent. You're exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that was just terrible agent. Wow. I mean, just terrible work. But all of that led to a marvelous Jack Conklin being drafted 8th. And let's face it, Tennessee really liked Conklin. In fact, Tennessee had been looking for ways to trade up and grab Conklin after they traded out. That he was the guy they wanted most. And eventually, they got their guy. And good for him. It's the highest drafted line deep. He's still managed. I couldn't believe that. Yeah, but it's the highest.
Either.
Yeah, the highest drafted lineman is Tony Mandrich. Now we all remember how that turned out. not very well. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty remarkable. And Conklin is interesting because he's now playing with that jackass from Michigan, Taylor Lewan, right? And just because they're teammates doesn't mean we have to like Taylor Lewan. And Taylor Lewan came out. With this whole, I'm a left tackle, I don't see myself as a right tackle sort of thing. It's like, dude, play whatever position they tell you to. You're in the pros. Right? And you really sucked last year.
Now, I have to stop you there for one second. Are you saying Jack Conklin was the highest offensive lineman period drafted to Sanders or highest Spartan? Because there's
highest,
been a couple offensive
Spartan lines. Highest Spartan offensive lineman.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Because I was going to say there's been some other offensive linemen, so I just wanted to check that. Okay.
Yeah. Highest Spartan offensive lineman.
Okay, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, and
although Flo's out of the hotel. Where was he? He was probably not till the maybe he was a late.
Not, he was a later first round draft pick.
Okay,
The funny thing is, I actually think Flozell is probably a better offensive lineman than Conklin, right? Conklin's fantastic, but people forget how good the hotel was. And I think part of what happened was, look, Michigan State has a much better reputation under D'Antonio now than the hotel had when he was being drafted. And that definitively plays a role. It shouldn't.
Yeah.
But it definitely plays a role in this. So you take a look at Conklin going to Tennessee. He's going to start a tackle, so good for him. Shalik Calhoun, DB, going to the Oakland Raiders. Do we really have to start rooting for the Raiders? He's there. Connor Cook is there. The last time I rooted for the Raiders, get ready for this, was when Rob Fredrickson.
Oh, yeah.
Rob Fredrickson.
That was a long time ago.
Long time ago. He's playing linebacker for the Raiders. And I don't know if you remember this, DB, but Fredrickson used to take a lot of heat because he was a pretty good linebacker. But everything that went wrong with the Oakland defense, for some reason, was blamed on Rob Fredrickson back then.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, it was a really weird situation. But Rob Fredrickson, one of those guys that could stop the run, he could cover. He had pretty good speed. You could plug and play him wherever you wanted. He was, as in the current NFL draft parlance, was a plug and play player. Which is really what you want, a player that you're able to plug right into the lineup. That's good. Then you had Connor Cook going to the Raiders as well. So that's what I'm thinking. That we got to bring the Raiders now and pay more attention to him. But Connor Cook's slide was interesting because there were quarterbacks drafted ahead of him that just didn't make sense. All right, if you want to go with the first two quarterbacks in the draft, that's fine. Goff and whoever the other guy is. That's fine. You can even make a case for, like, Carson Wentz and Paxton Lynch. All right, those three you get. After that, you figured Connor Cook was going to be the next person off the board. But instead, the next person off the board was Christian Hackenberg. DB, Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah, Connor Cook, talk about character issues, Sashmo. Christian Hackenberg has character issues.
I know. I mean, that's the weird thing, right? All right, so you can make the case, right, that Christian Hackenberg's got an NFL arm. He can make throws that the other players haven't. You can even make the case that he has a higher ceiling than all the other quarterbacks in the draft. But if you're not drafting Connor Cook for quote-unquote character issues, then why are you drafting Christian Hackenberg? That just makes zero sense. Christian Hackenberg, who routinely threw teammates, coaches, everyone under the bus except for himself for poor performance. I don't get that. And then there were a couple. Yeah. Go ahead, DB.
No, you finish your thought, and then I'll chime in, because I have some thoughts about this whole character thing. You go ahead.
Yeah. All right. But then at least it was sort of defensible by his high ceiling sort of thing, right? But then you get into there. Now there are a couple of quarterbacks drafted after Connor Cook who are basically limp noodles for arms. And you're sitting there going, all right, well, that explains why Cleveland is Cleveland. But still, what is this about Connor Cook that had him sliding down the board? And so now you start wondering, all right, what exactly is going on here? And you had all of this talk, and once again, I'm using the talk in the air quotes, about from NFL scouts and agents. Who cares what an agent thinks that says, well, you know, Connor Cook, he wasn't voted captain. when he was interviewing, they're like, well, you know, we didn't think he interviewed well. He's like, we think that he doesn't love football. We think he's sort of all about Connor Cook and that he's a cancer in the locker room and all of these sorts of things. His teammates didn't speak well of him. I don't know a single teammate that didn't speak well of him, DB. Not a single one. No one's ever said he's a cancer in the locker room. Anyone that knows anything knows that he's a really good kid and a really good guy with really good leadership qualities. So I'm not sure where any of this is coming from. It's really bizarre. He's been nothing but a good kid. He's a bit cocky. Yeah, and then there are a lot of people saying, well, he just rubbed NFL scouts the wrong way. He just rubbed people the wrong way during interviews. I mean, how bad do you have to rub someone the wrong way to slip that bad? I just don't get it. Now, look, Connor Cook has to assume some responsibility for this, right? Because clearly he didn't do enough in his interview to allay whatever concerns they had. But it seemed like there was a concerted smear effort, especially when you have other agents out there spreading this to depress his stock value, get other people involved, get other people drafted ahead of him. And it's really bizarre. I mean, you know, Laramie Tunsil's got a bong hit going in gas mask and got him being drafted in the first round, and yet, you know, no red flags surrounding Connor Cook, and he's dipped down into the fourth round and cost them millions of dollars. I just don't get it, DB. I don't see where this came from. I know D'Antonio ripped the press, and rightly so for it. I know Jameel Hill went out and just ripped people left and right, and good for her. It just makes zero sense. What's your take on what's going on here, DB?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. That's a good segue. I feel like the media was perpetuating this Connor Cook thing, because I don't recall, I didn't read every single article, but I don't recall one NFL scout at all on the record saying Connor Cook was a cancer or any of that stuff. And I'm just, I feel like this was a lot of like perpetuated like stuff from, maybe it was from the John Gruden. I'm not sure where this stuff was coming from, but
no, John Gruden actually liked them.
Yeah. See, so I'm not sure what I feel like it was a lot of like, I think it stems partly from this whole Archie Griffin thing from the, which doesn't make sense. That, and how does a guy, how are you a cancer in the locker room and only have 5 losses in your career as a quarterback?
I have no idea. Look, the Archie Griffin thing wasn't a good look, right? But he apologized for that. I mean, that should have blown over. He's a kid. He apologized for it. That should have blown over quite easily.
There's worse things.
I actually think this was a coordinated effort by other agents, TV. I really do. And here is another instance. Yeah, I think so. I think this is coordinated effort by other agents to get this out there and put this out there.
The only thing I can think of that was somewhat controversial, but if you go back to when Cook took the quarterback job at Michigan State, and there was a little bit of when Andrew Maxwell was the quarterback right at the beginning of the Rose Bowl season, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have anything possibly to do with that period of time?
No, I don't think so. That was a coaching thing, right? They thought Maxwell was the guy, and it turned out he wasn't, and Connor Cook comes out and takes the job. I don't think it had anything to do with that. But here's the thing. This was based on, like, fuzzy stuff. Like, well, it just doesn't feel right. He rubs people the wrong way. And I'm just sitting there going, you've got nothing concrete. You don't even have a concrete example of your problems and issues with it. I mean, no one could give a concrete example. So it was all this sort of fuzzy stuff. And when you get into this sort of fuzzy meta stuff, it's really weird. It will be one thing if they could point to it and say, yeah, that's what happened. Now, it could be that he just interviewed badly with NFL executives, because clearly a lot of people passed on. That said, it doesn't make sense. This whole thing doesn't make sense. I mean, look, D'Antonio's like, look, call me, talk to me. And I think D'Antonio is partially to blame for this, TV. I feel like if D'Antonio had been out on the record pre-NFL draft, just vociferously backing Connor Cook, I think some of this dies down. What do you think? And it's not D'Antonio's stuff, right? I mean, D'Antonio will talk to the coaches and the pros and executives behind the scenes. He's not sort of an out in front of the media type of guy to do this, but I think it might have made a difference.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought about that, Satchmo. I feel like there was so much ganging up on Cook that I think some of that could have helped. That's an interesting thing, but you know, the thing is, I just think, okay, so Cook was never named the captain and all this other stuff, but, you know, I started, when you were talking, Satchmo, I started thinking about quarterbacks with behavioral issues going, and the first person I thought about was Jim McMahon, and Connor Cook doesn't approach the Jim McMahon level to me. I mean, Jim McMahon was in trouble all the time when he was at Brigham Young, you know, and then I heard him described as too cocky, really, like, so Tom Brady is not too cocky, and Brett Favre wasn't too cocky. And, you know, it's really baffling to me that somebody would say he was too cocky. This stuff seems very nitpicky. I'll tell you, Oakland might have lucked into a good thing, although does Cook now become like a Kirk Cousins was behind RG3? You know, like good quarterback.
Well, now that brings me up to the second thing, right? Because this slide didn't just cost Cook money. It screwed him over professionally. Just like, and this is the second straight Michigan State quarterback that's gotten screwed over in the draft. And once again, I'm trying to figure out why. All right. So the first quarterback, obviously Kirk Cousins, got screwed over because the Redskins are a bunch of idiots and Shanahan's an idiot. And they drafted RG3 in the first round, and then they drafted Cousins in the fourth round. And so they ended up with two rookie quarterbacks. And it turned out the better of the quarterbacks was Kirk Cousins, which we always knew. But because Cousins was drafted behind a first-round draft choice, he had to wait this long to show his goods and show his stuff, and now he's a starting NFL quarterback. Now, Oakland traded ahead of the Dallas Cowboys to get it. Dallas was going to select Connor Cook. That was a much better landing point for Connor Cook, because there you have Tony Romo's the quarterback. He's the heir apparent. And so he gets to learn from Romo. He gets a bit of an apprenticeship. And let's face it, Romo gets hurt a lot. I mean, he's quite familiar with the candy stripers in the hospital. And as a result, Connor Cook would have gotten some playing time moving forward. And then he would have taken over as a starting quarterback. With Derek Carr, DB, he's got no path forward. This is just annoying.
Yeah, Tony Romo, that was actually a place where I thought he was going to go. And that actually would have been really good for him. You know, the other place that would have been good, but it didn't happen, I mean, talk about recovering and then drafting a native son, the Cleveland Browns should have really looked pretty hard at that. But the Browns are not known for making good decisions. I mean, the look what's happened. I mean, although they could have been afraid, maybe they thought that, you know, Cook, I don't know. Here's the thing. Johnny Football had a lot of, like, you know, it was a known fact that Johnny Football was like a Joe Namath kind of guy. And I never heard things about Connor Cook getting in trouble with the law. I mean, I could see if somebody backed off of somebody because of that. I never heard anything like that about Cook.
Yeah, I never heard anything about that. Look, Drew Stanton, who you and I know was actually a cancer in the locker room at Michigan State, right? You talk to any of the media covering him, they're like, you're terrible. He went in the second round.
Yeah.
All right. Connor Cook didn't have any of that hanging over his head. If Drew Stanton can go in the second round, you tell me Connor Cook slips in a fourth round? That makes zero sense.
Yeah.
But he gets to hang out with his buddy Shalik Calhoun. Went to I think in the third round pick of the Oakland Raiders. The Bay Area quickly becoming Michigan State West. You got Draymond Green out there playing for Golden State. Aaron Burbridge drafted by the 49ers. And so signing a contract. He is the heir apparently to Anquan Boldin, who's a free agent. So they want Burbridge to play that sort of physical slot receiver. And I think that's a really good role for him. of course, the 49ers have no quarterback and are coached by Chip Kelly. So, you know, those are two strikes against them right there. But still, good for Aaron Herbert for landing in the NFL and having what should be a pretty good role put forth on that front. And then Donovan Clark, DB, sort of out of nowhere, going to the San Diego Superchargers. I feel like breaking out the old San Diego Chargers theme song. San Diego Superchargers.
Here's the Chargers. Where's Muncy and Dan Fouts, baby? Where's Dan Fouts, baby?
Kellen Winslow.
Those are some fantastic players, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Air Coryell. And the powder blue uniforms. It didn't get much better than that.
So there might not be San Diego too much longer. This is, I'm digressing off of that, but hopefully they stay there. But all these people want new stadiums now, so who knows?
Yeah, well, the Chargers are talking about going to Los Angeles, and the Oakland Raiders are talking about going to Las Vegas. DB, you and I might just have to go see the Las Vegas Raiders in action.
Now, here's a question for you. I would love to do that, but here's a question for you. Will the NFL let them go to Las Vegas?
Yeah, I don't see why not. The NFL lets people play in London, and London has legalized sports betting. So if they can let them play in London, why can't they let them play in Las Vegas?
Well, it seemed like the stigma for a long time with all the pro sports leagues to have, which is stupid, to have a team located. You know, my landing spot thought for the Raiders, less glamorous, was San Antonio. I sort of, because they have the stadium there already. But
yeah, I could see that, the Riverwalk and the whole thing. But the NFL's really keen on having a team in London. And so that's a possibility. But I think I kind of like Las Vegas. The silver and black, sort of the robe Las Vegas image, it all fits together.
Yeah, well, you know, and you just touched on something just back there a second ago. Why didn't the 49ers take Connor Cook?
Oh, I have no idea. Because, see, Connor Cook is viewed as a pro-style quarterback, drop-back passer, all this sort of stuff. An underrated element of Connor Cook's game is his ability to move, is his ability to run the football, is his ability to throw on the run, all of those sorts of things. He would have been a good fit for San Francisco. He really would have been. But, you know, the Chip Kelly's the mad scientist, right? And who knows what the mad scientist thinks, and who knows why the mad scientist thinks the way he does and what he does. I mean, trying to deconstruct the mad scientist is like, it's like trying to deconstruct Captain Ahab or Moby Dick. It requires just way too many hours on the couch to figure it out.
Yeah.
Sparty talk going literary on you people.
Oh, my God. And the next half hour, Satchmo will be doing the C-SPAN book review for the week as well. So we look forward to that.
Oh, speaking of C-SPAN, did you see Larry Wilmore at the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
All right, time out. Okay, we're going to digress off of the Connor Cook for a second. Yes, I saw the Larry Wilmore, Satchmo. Everybody's writing and talking about this whole N-word thing. What is your comment on that?
I have no problem with it. Basically, what he did was he took a conversation that is happening all the time in quote-unquote black space, in African-American space. He took that conversation, complete with language and context, and no, he didn't use the ER phrase, he used the A phrase, right? The version ending with A. And so he took that conversation, he took that language, and he moved it out of African-American space, and he moved it into mainstream space. That's all he did. And it was a way for him to signify pride, in what Obama has accomplished and what Obama means to him and the community. And that's the spirit in which it was expressed. It was a very heartfelt expression. And I think people should take it that way and calm their asses down. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, generally speaking, I agree with you. I bristle at the word, and I don't know that I think he should have gone all the way with it there with the Prez, but at the same time, I do understand what you're saying, and largely I know that that's where he was coming from. The one thing that's unfair is people are now calling him a two-bit comic and everything like that, and that's unfair to him because I think he's actually funny, and the show is quite funny on Comedy Central.
Think,
so I think that it's unfair.
I think he's funny. I think his show is funny, and I have to admit, I thought he killed it out there, right? He lost the room because Wolf Blitzer can't laugh at himself.
Wolf Blitzer can't tell the difference between Prince and Jimi Hendrix. He gets on the air and says, Prince has died today, known for his famous song Purple Haze.
Yeah, what was that? And then, seriously, key race alert, there are only two races, the Republican primary and the Democratic primary. Why do we need a key race alert? We have a key race alert. Really? This is an election night where you actually have key races. There are only two races you're talking about. Why do you have to preface it? We have a key race alert. No, Wolf Blitzer's terrible. The Situation Room is terrible. Larry Wilmore was right for calling them out of it. See, the funny thing is that routine played a lot better in the living rooms in America than it did in the room there. Because, look, the Brian Williams jokes were hilarious, right?
Oh, yeah.
Brian Williams deserves to be made fun of. It's not his fault the press can't laugh at themselves. And you and I used to be press, right? So I'm sitting there laughing at the Brian Williams jokes. They're very, very funny. But here's the other standpoint. I mean, and not, I mean, just to address the elephant in the room, but look, these jokes came from a very African-American sensibility, right? And there weren't that many African-Americans in the room sitting there, and you can't really count Don Lemon. But I'm bummed.
That's funnier and funnier as I think about it. Anyway.
So, yeah. And so, as a result, of course the comedy wasn't going to play well to the room. But it comes from a very specific place, and I just have a feeling that a lot of people were uncomfortable with the brand of humor that he was putting on display. And that's a large part of it, right? Because if Chris Rock had given the exact same routine, or if Eddie Murphy had given the exact same routine, they would be lauded right now for truth tellers, right? But this wasn't Chris Rock or Eddie Murphy. This was a comic that a large part of America had never heard of before. And as a result, it was taken in a completely different context. But if Chris Rock does exactly the same routine, people are standing up and applauding. But because it's Larry Wilmore, not Chris Rock, it had a different reaction.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're exactly right. The person telling it got ridiculed more than I think it's the room, that makes that feel worse than in the living room. You're right.
Yeah, because look, I've talked to white, black, brown. I mean, my sort of cross cultural melange of friends. They all thought it was hilarious, right? It all depends on your point of view. And look, I understand the uncomfortability with the use of the N-word. I get it, especially to the president, especially on national TV and global TV and all of those sorts of things. So I get that, and I understand that. But on the other hand, it's language, right? And you've got to understand that, I mean, and this is just sort of the way it is. It's acceptable for some people to say it in some situations that everyone else can't. And that's just sort of the way that works. And I learned to live with that a long time ago. And I think that's sort of part of the uncomfortability, too. And then it's a generational thing, right? If you sort of cleave this generationally at 45, right? anyone 45 and younger is more or less okay with the way Wilmore did it, and anyone 45 or older, regardless of race, Black, Asian, Hispanic, regardless of race, anyone 45 or older is really upset with what they saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. That was a good digression. Back to Michigan State. Interesting class of undrafted players, DB. Jack Allen going to New Orleans, which good for Jack Allen. I think he's going to stick around at center there. De'Anthony Arnett headed to Seattle. Arjun Colquhoun headed to Dallas. Darian Harris headed to Cincinnati. And I think Darian Harris, DB, has the best shot of this group at sticking around with the team. Joel Heath, yeah. Houston. Trevor Pendleton, Baltimore. Tabor Pepper, long snapper, Baltimore. Lawrence Thomas, J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. A.J. Troop, Kansas City. And R.J. Williamson, Green Bay. It's a pretty good haul for the Spartans, DB. You can tell why this is a good football team.
That's a really good haul, and then it makes me start to feel worried, Satchmo, that what's left in the cupboard for us in 2016?
Yeah. How about that, right?
Scares me a little bit.
It does. It's the Malik McDowell show, isn't it?
Right, yeah, exactly. It's Malik McDowell, and, well, the middle linebackers for Michigan State will be pretty good.
Yeah, look, Michigan State's got to reload, and this was sort of one of the interesting things that was happening at spring practice, right, is so watching them try and reload, and it looks like Michigan State's going to be good in at the linebacker position. Of course, you have Malik McDowell, who is expected to be a special player up front, but the depth around Malik McDowell still has to emerge, So we'll wait till fall to see that. The linebacker position looks solid. And the secondary position, DB, looks good as long as Vontae Copeland comes back healthy. It looks like the back seven for Michigan State can be pretty good.
Yeah.
And then you look at the other side of the ball. It's like, all right, do we know who quarterback's going to be? Nope, no idea. Do we know who's going to be playing at the offensive line? Nope, no idea. Although we expect the offensive line to be pretty good because they've been recruiting the position fairly well. They've had depth at that position. And so the hope is that that's going to do well, although the injury situation can play a factor there. Wide receiver, we got a bunch of young kids. This feels like the year of what Michigan State went 7-6 after they had that one really good year, DB. And you expected them to reload, and they didn't quite work out that way. And so it feels like you've got more pieces in place, right? So this is going to define the program to a certain degree. Is Michigan State the type of school that can reload, or is Michigan State the type of school that rebuilds? And this is going to go a long way to determine that.
Yeah, I feel like the program has progressed enough now to the point that this is a bit of a reloading, but I also wouldn't be surprised if this team and stumbled by stumble now, I say 9-3 or 10-2 instead of 11-1, 12-0. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even 8 wins seems between 8 to 10 wins. Look, if they get between 8 to 10 wins, I think that's a pretty good season. Anything fewer than 8 wins feels like a disappointment. I think
based on their schedule, I feel like this team can get into the 9 or 10 win category. I think they lucked out this year having Ohio State and Michigan at home. It doesn't mean those are guaranteed wins because Michigan's going to be awfully tough on defense. I mean, the Spartans division is the Spartans, Ohio State, and Michigan. That's the division right now. I don't think Penn State is quite up into that category yet. But I feel like, the Spartans at least get the Buckeyes and Wolverines at home in a year of transition and later in the year too. So we'll really see what kind of, team the Spartans have. Playing Notre Dame on the road early might be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame on the road early is a big challenge. And look, this is an interesting season in a lot of different ways, right? Because you have Michigan sort of building their team. I don't know where they're at on that front, so we'll see this year. Ohio State having to reload. How did Ohio State not win the national championship the last 4 years based on the number of players they put into the NFL? Well, we know the answer to that question. Michigan State beat them twice.
Yes. So I reminded my brother in Ohio this week, who was just tragically disappointed about the Tigers losing six in a row to the Indians in two series, that he just what you just said, Tessa, the Spartans have beaten Ohio State in football 2 out of the last 3 years, so tell them to be quiet.
Yeah, it's by the way, I mean, both wins on the road, right? Both wins on the road in Columbus. Do you think like the Columbus AD, now when Michigan State comes to town, just gets Papa John's, you know, ready before the game even starts?
He's going to open a Papa John's stand in the Columbus Stadium, Satchel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Urban Meyer will have a ticket to it right away before the game starts.
Oh man.
That never gets old. For Spartan fans, the Papa John, Urban Meyer legend will never quit.
Never quit. But Ohio State, this is the interesting thing. This is sort of the difference between Ohio State and Michigan State at this point. Everyone just expects Ohio State to reload, right? And I don't know whether that's fair, but everyone just expects Ohio State to reload. Whereas with Michigan State, we're waiting to see if they reload. And so if they reload, then Michigan State's program moves sort of into the next level, the next level of programs in college football, the ones that are able to withstand, you know, 8, 9, 10 players to the NFL and still come back and have a solid season. Because not that many people can do that.
If Mark D'Antonio is able to pull this team at least into a Big Ten championship this year, we're at a whole different level, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
He doesn't even have to win the Big Ten. Just getting him in there would be like, okay, this is pretty good stuff here.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. And when you think about it, and this helps on a recruiting front, right? Right now, there are 10-year-old kids who know nothing but Michigan State being a winning program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where you're sort of seeing an interesting divide between parents and kids regarding Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
Kids look at Michigan State, it's like, all right, winning program, I want to be there.
Yeah.
Parents look at Michigan State and they remember the old Michigan State. And they say, well, why don't you consider going to these other places? And the kid's like, no, I want to go there. And they're like, well, why don't you consider going to these other places? And so it's this sort of interesting divide that I think Michigan State is still crossing the hump. So they've crossed the hump with the kids, but they still have a ways to go in crossing the hump with the parents.
Yeah.
But they're getting there. And I think if they can pull it off again this year, it doesn't matter how they do in the bowl game. It really doesn't. If they can get to the Big Ten championship game, or they're second in the Big Ten East, I think that sets themselves up really, really well moving forward. And that should be the goal. The goal here. That said, look, if you win the Big Ten East, you're winning the Big Ten, right? I mean, is there any doubt about it? I mean, who's on the other side of the Big Ten?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Satchel. It is slim pickings over there on that side. I mean, there's some hurting going on over there. I mean, Wisconsin's in this sort of funky period. I'm not sure what they are anymore. They're not the same Wisconsin. Nebraska is going through transition. Iowa, you can't count on them. The being in one Big Ten championship doesn't, you know, and they want to fire Kirk Ferentz every week there. There's nothing over there on that side.
Yeah, slim pickings. So I did. Anyway, I think Michigan State's in a good position. If they deliver, and once again, this is about program depth. Do the players come in? Do the players that you've been grooming step up? Do your freshmen come in and contribute? Do your redshirt freshmen come in and contribute? How quickly do they gel as a team? All of those sorts of things. And I have a feeling that way, way, way too much attention is going to be placed on the quarterback decision.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think and I think the Spartans, in this version of the Spartan team, I think if Tyler O'Connor didn't win out, let's just say, for example, I think that you could get by with a combo for a while and see how it goes. It has worked before.
Yeah, it has worked before. And so we'll see how that goes. But all the focus is going to be there. To me, the focus needs to be on the offensive line and defensive lines. If the offensive lines and defensive lines are doing their job, then everything else will flow from that. Everything else is possible. So that's where the attention needs to be.
Yeah.
All right. NCAA changed course on these off-campus camps. Jim Harbaugh can go on his barnstorming tour throughout the nation. bully for the shirtless wonder. But more interesting to me, DB, is it allows Michigan State coaches to participate in sound mind and body camps, which is where, to be fair, State's really made their mark in terms of recruiting.
Yeah, that's a good point, Satchmo. And I hadn't really thought about that, but that is true. Mark D'Antonio, when he came into Michigan State, stood up to the Michigan brass that was there and stands up to Harbaugh and Urban Meyer at these things. And it's been a great vehicle for Michigan State. And so, there is an advantage from that standpoint. And that's an excellent point.
And the Michigan State recruiting coordinator, Curtis Blackwell, was the founder of the Sound Mind and Body Camps, and has a deep and historical connection to that. And that certainly helps. But one of the reasons why Michigan State, along with a lot of other schools, was against this NCAA rule is it prevented their coaches from coaching at these camps. And I think it's going to be interesting moving forward that I think one of the things is, all right, if you're going to prevent schools from doing like the satellite camps that Harbaugh wants to do, go ahead and prevent those, but still allow the schools to send their coaches to these sorts of camps. Because I think these sorts of camps do a few things. One, they are great recruiting opportunities. Well, it's not a lie. But two, these camps are actually really good for the kids. They're really good for the kids in that they teach them a lot of life lessons. And anyone that's been to these camps, when you go to the camp for the first time, you're actually shocked at how much emphasis is placed on leading a good life. It's not just drills and football and that sort of thing. The sound mind part and leading a good life is a large chunk of these camps, and it really imparts good life lessons to the kids. Additionally, it also gives kids a chance to make a name for themselves. And a lot of kids get noticed at these camps by other schools, but also by MAC schools, by schools all over, that weren't getting attention before, that weren't getting any love from the recruiting services, that other schools just didn't know about. They put on a good performance here, all of a sudden they're on the radar and it changes their lives. And so you don't want to remove life-changing vehicles from the lives of these kids. And so I think it's important to make sure that you keep these types of vehicles. It's not just this camp, but other camps of its ilk available and open while still getting rid of the barnstorming tour. Hey, look at us. We're the Harlem Globetrotters of college basketball. Or college football.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's important. I think there's two sides of the coin on this, and again, I'm not really like hugely in favor of what Harbaugh is doing with these taking his team around to these places, but on the other hand, I'm really kind of less antsy about that than what Michigan does with, as I stated previously, with what the University of Michigan does with this whole NFL draft style party that they do with all the new recruits. I think that stuff's really bad. I think that's worse than these camps.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. All right. The crime blotter, DB. Keith Apley. Guns outside a strip club.
Oh, boy. Which one was it, Satchmo? Well, it was in Dearborn, apparently. Was it BT's? We know what BT stands for, don't we?
Why don't you share, DB?
It stands for Brian Thompson, the owner of the club. You like that?
I like that. In a sense, I feel bad for a Catholic, right? Because it sounds like they were looking for someone else, and they got him instead.
But what was he doing with that in the club like that? What was he thinking?
Well, apparently he's licensed to carry at least one of them, although he might be licensed to carry both, but he's licensed to carry at least one of them. And he was out. He wasn't in the club, right? He was out in his car. Now, the police claim they found weed in the car, but they don't know if it's weed. And Apley's like, dude, I don't smoke weed. I can promise you it's not weed. Let's do the drug test now. And so you got this whole thing going up. So the police case against Apley might be a little fuzzy. But on the other hand, all right, so you've got that aspect to it. So on the one hand, you feel bad for him, right? You really do. They were looking for someone else. And so they weren't even looking for Apley. So Apley just got caught up. In addition, you know, the police case against Apley might be a little hazy. So that's problematic. But on the other hand, you've got to look at NBA athletes, right? It's like, look, I know you're like other human beings in society, but you've got too much to lose, right?
Yeah.
You can't get involved in this stuff. And that's the hard thing. That's the hard lesson in this is guns. I know you come from a gun culture. There's nothing wrong with guns, Second Amendment rights, all this sort of stuff. You want to know what? Until you're retired, put the guns away. And I hate to be telling this to people, but that's just sort of the way it's got to be. There's too much to lose from a financial standpoint to be involved in that.
Yeah, that and a safety standpoint, Tatchmo. I mean, you have a big target on your back when you're an NBA player. And, you know, I was reminded of the whole Gilbert Arenas thing that got out of control when he was playing for the Wizards and that Russian roulette crap that he was doing in the locker room.
Plaxico Burress is like example number one, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the clear number one, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like you see what happened there. You can't do it. You can't take the risk. Look, whatever you want to do on that front after your career is over, go for it, right?
Yeah.
But while you're in your prime earning years, and look, he's an NBDL player, right? He got a cup of tea with the Orlando Magic, so he clearly can get to the next level. But now this is going to hurt his career. And it could be that he's not guilty, and it could be that there are no issues there, but the problem is he put himself in a position, and it sucks to be able to say this. It sucks to say, look, you can't even put yourself in that position. And that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, DB, we can do whatever we want because no one cares, but, but no, you can't do it. You just can't do it.
I agree. Yeah, it's just you make choices in your life, and he just made a bad choice there. And yeah, it's going to cause some NBA teams to take a look at him and think there's going to be some character issues, and do we want that on our team? And that's a tough one, you know. And even when you're a Plaxico Burress kind of guy, that's when you hire a guy to be with you if you're going out in public and you feel unsafe. I mean, I can understand the aspect of feeling unsafe. Or, for that matter, just, you know, have somebody bring people to your room. You know, why are you going out there? You know what I mean? Like, just, you're right. Just wait till you're retired to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's not even the clubs that are the problem, right? It's the guns that go with it. You just got to get out of the gun culture. And that sucks. And look, everyone else gets to do it. All of your peers are doing it. I get it. I understand it. until your career is over, you can't be part of that.
Hmm.
And it's not fair, but it's sort of the way it is.
Yeah, but it unnecessarily makes Keith Appling look really bad when he's not really bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just,
exactly.
It's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate and kind of sad, too.
Yeah, and I'm rooting for Appling. I hope the case against him falls apart. I hope that, he is presumed innocent, and I hope his innocence is proven. And so I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him to make the league, and all of those sorts of things. But I hope that, you know, when all of this is said and done and he's putting his life back together, that he leaves guns out of it until he's retired. And that's sort of the sincere hope there. All right. We've got a couple of messy situations we need to discuss. The Detroit Red Wings, DB.
No.
All right. There's a horse named Nyquist that's doing better than Gustav Nyquist.
Can the horse skate?
That's what I'm wondering. Can the horse shoot right-handed?
Or
does the horse
goal?
Have a right-handed shot?
Can he play defense?
Does the horse have a good glove hook? Oh, my goodness. The Red Wings are a mess. And you're seeing these stories from Helene St. James or Helen St. James or however you want to pronounce her name. And God bless her soul. About the potential prospects rising up, the defensive prospects. You have Ryan Sproul and others who are coming up. We read these stories every year, right? And every year, none of them make the team. Can we just say right now, let's get rid of the entire defense corps and play all the kids? Let's see if they can play.
I think other than DeKaiser, I'm with you, but I don't see the Red Wings being that bold. The Red Wings are not a bold franchise to do that.
No. They're the opposite of bold.
Yeah.
It feels like this 25-year playoff streak has them all whipped.
Yeah.
We just went there, folks. It really does. All right. All of these kids should be playing. Like, they don't have any waivers left, and we don't know if any of them can play. What sense does that make?
Yeah, it doesn't make any at all.
It makes zero sense. I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. We need to play the kids. We need to play them at forward. We need to play them at defensive. It's almost as if, yeah, you keep the Kaiser. Maybe you keep Cronwall, get rid of Erickson, get rid of Kyle Quincy, get rid of all these guys.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Red Wings have such an opportunity right now to be bold. And the reason is you're going to have a lot of interest in the Wings for the next 2 or 3 years because it's the end of the Joe and you're going to have a lot of sentimentality over that and all the great times. And you're going to have this brand new arena, which is going to be really nice. And for the first couple of years, it's going to be pumped up and loud and great because it's a new place and people are going to want to go there. And the Red Wings have an opportunity to sort of not be the greatest for the next few years. And this is a great time to try to be bold and restock. And maybe that means you suck a little bit doing it, but the outcome will be in about 5 years a really good hockey team.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly it, right? I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about. The outcome's a really good hockey team. And you might as well find out now whether your kids can play or not, right? What's
yeah,
the point of
right.
having all of these prospects if none of them can play or if you don't know if they can play? And everyone's like, yeah, but time has to be earned. Screw that. Let's find out if they can play.
Yeah.
And if they suck, well, then the Red Wings suck, and then we get to draft in a better position. We get to draft in a much better position to restock with talent. And if the kids play, then the kids can play. Then we know the kids can play. And that's a good thing, too. I just don't get the reluctance here. It makes zero sense, and it's just very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I think a change needs to be made in the we've said this offline enough, and this probably was mentioned on a podcast maybe several times previous, but I think a change needs to be made in the general manager spot, Satchmo. I don't think we're even saying Ken Holland needs to be fired. I think we're saying Ken Holland needs to be moved up a little bit in the organization and let somebody else get in there, maybe somebody that used to play for the Red Wings.
Well, can we settle for Ken Holland being brainwashed? I mean, or just like a brain transplant? Like,
yeah. He's operating like it's 1998 still.
Yeah. Look, you've got Xavier Ouellette, Ryan Sproul, and Nick Jensen. Those are three guys that should be playing, right? Am I missing something?
No, you know what it is, and it's always been this way with Ken Holland, Satchmo. You go back and back and back, and before it used to work, he doesn't trust putting kids in there. I mean, the closest he ever got to that was to let the Wings use Chris Osgood in goal.
I can't get it. I just don't get it.
It's very frustrating, and it's backwards thinking. It's that same kind of – it's the Wings have had their championships. We've had a lot of success as Red Wing fans. There's been a lot of success. The Red Wings have, of all the Detroit teams, room to be able to grow before our eyes a little bit because they've had success, and we know they can get it back.
Yeah. I'm just frustrated with the Wings. I am a frustrated Wings fan. I am ready for I'm ready for Holland to do something drastic, but they've got to do it. Same thing up front. You've got to play all the kids. You've got to play Mantha. You've got to play Pulkkinen. You've got to play Yurko. You've got to play Frick. You've got to play all of these kids. It's because what are the veterans doing for you, D.D.? You want to know what the veterans are doing? They're not scoring, and they're turning the puck over. What do you got to lose?
Yeah, not to mention the Wings have signed a ridiculous contract with Franzen. I mean, I don't even know what they were thinking when they did that.
So, I mean, that's exactly what it is. So, I have no idea. What's going on. So, that's got to fix and that's got to change. That's just a mess. Another mess in Detroit, DB. And this one can't be fixed by a general manager brain transplant. The Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
Ugh. And so that's just a mess. And I guess Auschwitz is in the firing here, but is this all Auschwitz's fault, or is it Auschwitz's fault at all?
Well, no, the first part of your question, no, it is not all Auschwitz's fault. I mean, this team, there's a power struggle at the top of the Tigers, I think. Mike Ilitch, I think, has had too much say in the coming and going of what's going on, and he's trying like crazy to keep this team built with high salaries and is under the belief that free agents alone can make the difference. But in the process of that, the Tigers just sort of look like this cobbled together bunch that each year just they're getting worse and worse. And they're a team that they have three starting pitchers, and if two of them aren't good every night, then you have one really good consistent pitcher. You have a fifth guy who's imploding already, seven starts into the year, that shouldn't be starting anymore. And that might be Osmus's fault. He needs to make a change there. Who Osmus trots in and out of the bullpen can be questioned, but Osmus is only working with what he's got there. I don't even think the likes of a Joe Torre or Casey Stengel would be able to make the Tigers any better than what they are. Managers are overrated in baseball.
Yeah, take a look at this most recent game, right? He brought in the lefty to pitch the lefties. Well, that didn't work. And then he brought in the righty to pitch the righty. That didn't work. What's he supposed to do? It's like that's baseball 101. He followed the playbook exactly the way he's supposed to go, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, the Tigers' bullpen, which has been criticized a lot, actually was decent up until this weekend, and then two games now, and it's been really bad.
Do you think, and not to put a morbid twist on this, do you think the Tigers are hamstrung by the concept that they have to win the World Series before Mr. Ilitch dies?
There seems to be some sort of rush to do something while he's still alive, yes. And that's an interesting point. I think as an organization, they might be stuck there. I don't think the players necessarily care about that stuff. But you're right. I think in the organization, just like the Red Wings with the playoff streak, Satchmo, I think the Tigers are the same way in that respect. I think that's a good – very, very likely, yes. That's why the Tigers' payroll is like in the top five in baseball. In baseball.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense, right? But they've got a lot of money locked up in long-term contracts, right?
Yeah.
And so that's got a great deal to do with it. And so anyway, we'll see how that goes. NHL predictions, DB?
Well, first of all, the Western Conference series are much more entertaining than the Eastern ones. Just a better brand of hockey. The Dallas-St. Louis series is chippy. I like it. You have guys blowing kisses at each other. I love the Western Conference series, teams that are left, because it's all a bunch of teams that have one Stanley Cup between the four of them, and that's Dallas. That's the one Stanley Cup, oddly enough, when they were pretty good when Hitchcock coached them way back in the day in the pre-salary cap era. St. Louis is the Capitals of the West. You know, they always choke, but they're pretty good. I'm kind of rooting for them in a way. San Jose and Nashville, I have no problems with either one of them. I'd love to see that. I mean, it's interesting. Then you have the Eastern Conference. Tampa Bay has moved on. Oh, there's a general manager there named Steve Yzerman. He's pretty good. and just a hint, Red Wings, in case you're thinking about anything.
Don't raise any hopes. Steve Yzerman is not coming to the Red Wings.
I know. Yeah, he's not coming to Detroit, unfortunately, no. And then Pittsburgh and Washington. Pittsburgh is a better team, but it seems like, I mean, that series could end up going seven now. I'm not sure. The Caps are the ultimate chokers, and they have a really good coach. You know, like, finally made a good decision behind their bench, but there's something about that jersey. It's like the Tigers bullpen or something. I don't know what it is, Satchmo, but you put it on and it does something to you. I don't know what it is. If the Caps fall out again, there's going to be questions. But, you know, the thing is, Pittsburgh, look at
their
team.
Are you saying the Caps jersey
really
has been cursed by – are you saying the Caps jersey has been cursed by Tony Kornheiser?
I don't know. Did he do something? Does he have something to do with this, what do you think?
He's the one that wrote the famous column calling the Caps a bunch of choking dogs.
Wow. Well,
if the
I guess we'll
fits.
See in – yeah. Well, we'll see in the sands of time, Satchmo, if we go another 20 years in the Caps. Do you realize – I just thought about this the other day. Almost 20 years ago, the Red Wings won their second Stanley Cup in a row. You were there in 1998 in D.C. They swept the Caps. Do you know, Satchmo, that is the farthest the Caps have gone since? They have not – gone around the second round is as far as they've gone since 1998 when they went to the final.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's true. They have never advanced past the second round in all that time.
I did not know that. Yeah. And what's weird is Washington has turned into a really good hockey city since then. It was a terrible hockey city back in 1998 to the point where and it's unthinkable now, but think about this. At the then MCI Center, two-thirds of the crowd, right, were Red Wings fans.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the crowd. The only, and not only were two-thirds of the crowd Red Wings fans, the one-third of the crowd that were Taps fans were in the cheap seats.
Yeah.
That would never happen now.
No. The Caps have really built up a hockey following here to the point where fans in this town who are used to now suddenly in the D.C. area, suddenly teams that choke or can't make the playoffs, the Caps are the ones that they have the most hope in, believe it or not.
Yeah. It's sort of the way it works. It's sort of a weird situation. All right. Pittsburgh's a really good hockey team, DB. Who wins this series, Pittsburgh or Washington?
I think Pittsburgh, and I feel like Pittsburgh's going to be hoisting the cup, Satchmo. They really put together a pretty nice team. When I saw the good mixture of youth and then the good free agent pickups that they made that kind of blend in there with Phil Kessel and Carl Hagelin and those defensemen that they picked up. They have a good team, actually, when I watch them play. I think the road to winning the cup is in their favor, believe it or not.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they're the odds-on favorites at this point. I would
mm-hmm.
like to see St. Louis do well. That would be nice. I'm not a big San Jose fan. So I don't really care whether they do well or not, but I would like to see St. Louis do well. That would be good.
St. Louis has always been cursed, and they I don't know what it is with that franchise, but they never quite even get to the Stanley Cup. I think the last time they were even in the Stanley Cup, I think Scotty Bowman was their coach very early on in their franchise history, I think.
Yeah. I agree.
And they could then they had to play Bobby Orr in Boston. That was their reward. I mean, you know, it was nice to be there, but it was like, you know, okay. And they've had good teams and good players over the years, but never quite could break through. And, yeah, I actually am rooting very well for St. Louis. I mean, that would be great mm-hmm. for their town. They just lost their football team. I mean, not that I really care much about Cardinals baseball fans because they're pretty full of themselves, but – I do. That would be nice for them from a hockey standpoint to have a title, but I sort of feel like Pittsburgh stands above everybody in the end.
How much would it stick in Brett Hull's craw to watch the Blues win a Stanley Cup and him not be a part of it? I think that part appeals to me the most.
I think Brett Hull would be very, very depressed that he couldn't have been part of that. I agree.
Yeah. That definitively appeals to me. And it would be good to see an old Norris division team doing it. So you've got those sorts of things floating around. To bring the NHL playoffs back to Michigan State, because that's what we do, part of the aftermath of the playoffs this playoff season is the firing of Bruce Boudreau.
Mm-hmm.
Quality hockey coach, does his best work with youngsters, gets the most out of kids, gets the most out of young players, takes young raw players and develops their skills and their talents to the point where they become top flight professionals. He wins at every level. More importantly, he's won championships with prospects. It sounds like the makings of a good college hockey coach, don't you think?
Yes, a good coach who's now been taken by another NHL team, unfortunately.
Oh, who's he been taken by?
It has just been announced, and I saw it last night on Hockey Night in Canada. They have the bloggers on in the second intermission, and confirmed today the Minnesota Wild have hired Bruce Boudreau.
Look, Michigan State had their window, right? They could have hired
him. Yep. Oh, yeah, they had like 2 weeks.
They had 2 weeks to get this done. Now we just got to hope that he flames out of Minnesota, and then we can hire him again.
Yeah, chances are high that he will. He's a good coach. He works well with younger players. He's won a championship on the minor league level with college-age-type kids. And he'd be perfect for Michigan State and such a big recruiting draw. I mean, kids wouldn't care. You know, that he bombed out in Washington and Anaheim, they'd say, this guy is going to make me ready for the NHL.
Yeah, it would have been a perfect fit. Talent pipeline open, good developer of
yeah.
players. high cachet, really good hockey coach. It would have been the perfect fit. And now he's with the Minnesota Wilds.
And he'd be a perfect guy for Michigan State. I mean, he'd be a perfect he would blend right into that, and he'd be such a interesting media phenomenon and a great, you know, character person to have behind the bench at Munn, and the students and the alumni. I think everybody would be very excited about it. And again, we're just sort of standing there in Tom and Anastasville, Satchmo.
Yeah. All right. NBA playoffs. How much do you care on a scale of 1 to 10?
I really just want to get to the Western Conference Final and the championship, Satchmo. And the Eastern Conference, sadly, is just the Cleveland Cavaliers show.
Yeah.
I mean, unless somebody gets hurt on the Cavaliers of note, like LeBron or Irving, no one's going to stop them. And then as far as the West goes, Oklahoma City's making some noise, but I feel like San Antonio and Golden State, Curryless still, and I feel like San Antonio is going to have everybody's number at the end. I thought that even when Curry was healthy. I think San Antonio is a pretty good team.
Oklahoma City's making a comeback here, right? They're all
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. But I feel like at the end, this is a test for San Antonio. And isn't this Tim Duncan's last hurrah?
Oh, Tim Duncan, the ageless wonder. I think it would be irresponsible for us to put a last hurrah on Tim Duncan ever.
Hmm.
Plus, he has to make a lot of money after he lost all of it in the divorce.
Well, that's what TNT is for. That's what the TNT studio crew is for.
is that what TNT's for? Go join Charles Barkley and crew.
Yes.
get a regular salary.
Somebody needs to sit between Kenny and Chuck.
Oh my goodness.
Either that or Kelly Ripa needs a co-host.
Wow. Is she bitter or what?
Dude, she went off the deep end, man. But you know what?
Oh.
Here's the thing. You have no control. Howard Stern is very smart. He's a very smart man. And Howard Stern said now, I mean, the gone are the days from like way back when, like when Johnny Carson ran late night and the networks couldn't come within 10 feet of his show. And, you know, when you hosted Good Morning America way back in the day or the Today Show, you know, no one was going to touch you and no one was going to change your producers. No, that's not the case anymore. People meddle in your show from the networks now. And Michael Strahan, like him or not, I don't really particularly care for him as a host, but people like him. He's a talented, you know, guy. And he got plucked very smartly by ABC for Good Morning America. Good for him. And it was smart. Kelly Ripa needs to just take a pill.
Yeah. She lost it in a big way. She didn't come into work. And then when she did come into work, she started taking jabs at, like, Michael Strahan's divorces and stuff on the air. It's,
yeah.
I, she is bitter. You think her husband left her? I mean, wow.
Yeah,
she
I mean.
This is the business. She's been in this business long enough to get this.
Yeah, I mean, changes happen, and she might end up with a very good – there's a lot of good potential co-hosts out there that she could end up with. She just needs to relax. I mean – you know, it's still a strong franchise, and, you know, it could end up even better than with Michael Strahan.
Any truth to the rumor, DB, that you've sent your tape in?
What was that again?
I said, any truth to the rumor that you've sent your tape in?
No, they're not going to get too far with me, Sasko. I think that would be a ratings nosedive
All right.
Honestly, though, Satchmo, I'll make this prediction. I would be better than Tim Stout.
Mm. Tim Stout also going off the deep end, by the way.
Oh, what's going on with Tim Stout?
Oh, hold on a second. Let me see if I can pull it up real fast. While I look for this column to pull up, DB, talk a little bit about Michigan State baseball.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Thank you, because we started off the show talking about Michigan State baseball. We got sidetracked by Kate Upton's body. But anyway, the Michigan State baseball team has actually been doing pretty well this year. They did not have a really strong series against Nebraska at home this weekend, and that was a critical series because Nebraska, a pretty good baseball program, and the Spartans lost 2 out of 3 at home. They did win today on Mother's Day. Good for them. They have 2 crucial series coming up, one at Iowa and then Maryland at home coming up to sort of close the regular season slate. And the Spartans have done pretty well this year. They broke all this hex with Michigan. They won 3 out of 4. They have a very good, I guess whatever you call it in college baseball, RPI. If they have a strong finish and a good Big Ten tournament, and I think that would mean getting to the Big Ten championship game, even if they don't win it, I think they could make the NCAA tournament as an at-large. It's very important, though, that they have a good finish. The tools are there. They just have to play better defense. They made 4 errors yesterday. Their heads weren't quite in the series with Nebraska all the time. They need to hit the ball better, but the pitching is there. They have such good pitching that they could get in the NCAA tournament and make some noise. I don't know if they could go all the way, but that it would just be nice. That's the goal in college baseball. You know, you get in there and see what happens to the tournament. And the possibility is there this year for the Spartans. They've got to take advantage of it right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they're in place, but they got to finish strong, right? If they finish strong, they'll get an at-large bid. Last year, they were expecting an at-large bid. It didn't happen. And so now the key is to finish strong. The Nebraska series didn't do them any favors.
No, that was not good, but it was a step back. But at the same time, they're still in a good position, and they can recover from it. They've got to recover fast, though, because, you know, there's 2 weeks left in the regular season.
All right. And the cool thing is Michigan State baseball has become one of the best tickets in town, which is kind of fun, right? They're a competitive baseball team.
Yeah, you know,
team.
Michigan State, yeah, you talk about an interesting twist of things. When we were at Michigan State, Tashmo, I mean, it was these rickety bleacher seats, and they couldn't beg people to come watch those games. And now they have this nice little stadium, and I hope the Spartan women's softball team can end up in a similar position because – they have the same facilities, and I hope they can get that turned around there because the softball team is just pitiful. But the baseball program is really strong right now. They've done very well for themselves, and it's one of the strongest sports at Michigan State, believe it or not.
Yeah,
it's as strong as football and women's basketball.
Nope, I'm with you. All right, so we've got 1:45 left. Do we want to talk about Prince or Tim Stout?
Give me Tim Stout first.
All right. So Tim Stout, off the deep end, all right, apparently is unhappy that you can transfer within the Big Ten. Actually, he seems unhappy that players can transfer at all, but really unhappy that players can transfer into the Big Ten. He goes, now Michigan has now been burned twice with Max Diefeld at Indiana this past season. Spike Albrecht headed to Purdue for 1 year. So he wants coaches across the country to unite to seek stricter transfer rules to hinder those who want to move on after so much time and money was spent to recruit them in the first place. Oh, poor university. Really? All right. And then he's been over this before, but he doesn't like players missing class time for NCAA tournaments.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. The NCAA is always harping about athletes getting degrees. So why are the NCAA women's golf regional tournaments being played Thursday through Saturday this week when many schools are in final exams, such as Michigan State? The MSU team had to leave Tuesday to play in this weekend's tournament at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Shouldn't the 5 MSU players on the trip be studying and taking exams? Who says they are students first? Get over it, Tim. Really?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, it just gone off the deep end. He's stuck in 1955, which is probably when he broke into the business.
Oh my gosh, look, I on a personal level, enjoyed listening to Tim's show when I lived in Lansing, in East Lansing, for a number of years. And Tim, at least at one time, I don't know now, but at least at one time, was you know, there was a big following of people that loved the show. But I think he's off base here.
Yeah, he's completely off base. Way off base. All right, we're done with Tim Stout. Prince.
The man is a legend, and you won't forget where you were when you heard about this. And, so much music. I started downloading everything, and just to know how many songs he had his hand in, even beyond his own, was remarkable.
All of these unreleased songs from the Prince vault mean that we're going to be getting Prince songs for like the next 10 years, which is actually pretty cool when you think about it. But it's also pretty sad because these are songs that clearly Prince didn't want to put out there, yet his estate is going to do it to make some money. And the estate sort of needs to make some money, right? Because he didn't do any estate planning, which means that they're going to get killed on taxes. And it's just a real mess. I guess the larger lesson in the whole Prince thing is write a will.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
you're right.
Shocking. That is really shocking that he didn't have a will.
Yeah. But he was a musical genius, right? He would write songs that didn't have bass lines but sounded fantastic. Think about that.
Yeah.
How do you write a song without a bass line, yet Prince would do it? I mean, that's the type of genius that we're talking about here. And the man could play guitar. He's in Jimi Hendrix league when it comes to guitar. I mean, and who knew? And then apparently on his latest tour, I didn't know this, but it was just Prince on the piano. And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Prince is a pop star, right? And he's extraordinary musician. But people, I don't think quite grasp the breadth of his musical genius to be able to do what he did the way he did it. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, he and the emotions that I saw in people were as strong as they were when Michael Jackson died. I mean, it was that same level of
I think it was stronger, at least in the United States. I think globally, Michael Jackson resonated more. But I think in the United States, the reaction to Prince was a little stronger.
Yeah, because I think we felt like we knew Prince. You're probably right, because I think we felt like we knew Prince a little bit more because of Purple Rain, but then also he seemed just a little bit more grounded. The Michael Jackson got a little bit odd, as time went on.
Yeah. Well, two of my favorite Prince stories actually have to do with, one sort of sports, but not really. The other is definitively sports. When the Minnesota WNBA team won their championship, he invited them all over to his house and played like a private concert for them, which I thought
that's
was
very
really
cool.
Yeah.
That's very
cool. And apparently he went to their games all the time. He was a big supporter of them. And I thought that was really cool. The other very funny story is apparently he destroyed Jimmy Fallon in ping pong once. And and listening to Jimmy Fallon tell this story is fantastic. So everyone should YouTube this story. But apparently Prince was a really competitive guy, right? And so he took competition. He did not like to lose. And so it didn't matter if it was ping pong or basketball or music, you name it. This was a guy that liked the win. And so that's sort of one of those cool sort of humanizing features of Prince that's come out since his death that I really like. But, yes, definitely loss of musical genius, and he will be missed. All right, any final thoughts before we log off, DB?
No other final thoughts other than, don't forget to follow us on Twitter there at Sparty Talk, and we'll be talking at you again in the coming weeks with more stuff and maybe some special concept shows as we go through the summer.
Yeah, some special concept shows, some special theme shows. I think it'll be fun, maybe a guest or two. So that'll be good. Yeah, and maybe a couple surprise drop-ins as well. So we'll go ahead and do that. And happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Happy Mother's Day, indeed. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.